Hello and welcome. I'm Alexander.
And I'm Simon.
We are still very much knee-deep in tech, and we found even more guests.
Yes.
And these are kind of famous. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show. Could you please introduce yourself to our listeners when you stop laughing?
I don't know if I was allowed to talk yet or not.
Are you, no, oh, you are.
Not. Now, sorry.
Okay.
Who are you again?
I don't know.
Oh, that would be great fun. Introduce each other.
Oh, yeah. Please.
Oh, wow. That's my illustrious cohort in crime, Joey Snow, a.k.a. Patch or Switch or Switch or Patch or whoever it happens to be.
Yes.
Not Patch and Switch?
No. Well, I guess you can kind of be both, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that works.
I think we kind of are both.
Yep. Microsoft geek and identity aficionado.
Yes. And then my buddy, Mr. Cloud Advocate, Cloud Ops Advocate himself, Mr. Rick Claus. And we're happy to be here.
Yeah.
So we've managed to track down Patch and Switch and
in person.
In Prague.
But the one missing problem is there's no beer on the table right now. There should be some Czech beer.
Yes.
I agree.
We are very sorry for
it's
that.
All right. But we'll make note for next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, alongside of being episode 98, not 100, but we're not going to go there. Sorry.
And that's a good point because this is episode 98 recorded at Experts Live in Prague in 2019.
They have a list of like six other people they're going to be interviewing and they're like, we don't want those guys on the 100th episode.
Got it.
I'm kind of curious who will get on the 100th episode.
Don't tell the guests. Make it a surprise.
Yeah.
Like, congratulations. You've just become the 100th person. No car, so no laptop, no Surface headphones.
So what's even worse is the fact that we've done 110 episodes,
oh, yeah?
But we suck at math. So while they're not number 100.
They have tech for that. They're knee-deep in tech.
Yep.
Yes. We're not knee-deep in math.
They got it.
True. Hey, fun fact, our first episode is actually not the first episode.
Shh, ooh. Don't say that.
Oh, interesting.
If you can find it. Yeah. It's the hard part. It's the hidden episode.
It is the special hidden episode.
We haven't had one of those yet.
The special hidden episode?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we'll make it happen.
It's all the rage now in podcast world.
Yeah.
So ninja podcasting, basically?
No.
Darknet podcasting.
Darknet.
You actually have to use a Tor listener for that.
So, this will be really good. Why are you here?
Oh, yeah. You know, I want to hear this too.
Because Simon basically grabbed us from the table and was waiting behind us until we were ready to go. And he just started, please follow me. And the next thing I know, he's leading us out of the conference center. Yeah. He's leading us down the stairs.
There was a white van.
Yeah, a white van.
Guy
it went
out,
dark throws, very quick.
Yeah, it did. I remember being thrown around. And the roads here are very bumpy.
Just, yes,
yeah. I'm not sure if you know that for your next guest that you... You abduct to bring to the...
We should have a mattress on the floor of the car. Yeah.
Yeah, because the roads here are really bumpy and got a little uncomfortable.
So, to specify my question, why are you here at Experts Live in Prague?
Oh, Experts Live in Prague.
Yeah. We delivered the keynote this morning.
Nice.
Which was kind of a cool little honor. We were asked... Oh, several months ago,
yep.
if we would do this little keynote thing. So,
and at first I thought it was a spam mail from Isadora. Like, how could someone? She actually went patch and switch at Microsoft.com and it answered.
Oh,
she didn't know that.
What?
It goes to our inbox, and she was asking to see if we'd be interested in doing a co-presentation of a keynote. After they do their kickoff introductions of stuff. And we thought about it for a hot minute, and we said, sure.
Sure.
So then we had to figure out what we were going to talk about. You saw what it was up there in the keynote room. And
I think we'll finally finish that preparation for that session tomorrow.
Yeah. Might be done by tomorrow.
Yep. When you have left.
Yes. Yeah.
Could maybe. Be. So your overarching theme for the keynote was stories and storytelling. Right?
Yeah, so it was titled From the Trenches.
It's working.
I know.
That's
awesome. Well done. So we titled it From the Trenches, Tales of the
Underappreciated
Technologists. Yeah.
We need to work on better titles. But
our abstract was pretty awesome.
The abstract was good. No one called us on the fact that we didn't actually talk about what was in the abstract that much, so we're very glad about that.
Have you seen the reviews yet?
Not yet, no.
No, we haven't seen any of the no.
But the approach was, yes, absolutely stories. The idea that we evolved as what became Patch and Switch through a challenge of becoming storytellers and collecting stories and sharing stories that we've had ourselves and from other people that we've talked with. And we kind of drew the parallel to a lot of changes been happening at Microsoft around listening more and then sharing after about what's going on. And then we evolved that in the keynote discussion to being an essential tool that people that work in technology need to also be able to do is to, again, listen more about what their customers and what their businesses are looking to do. And then create the story or create the narrative about the positive forward progression for that particular company. I almost sounded like that was coherent.
That's pretty cool.
I like that. I like that. And then obviously we threw in some humor here and there. Hopefully it landed. We'll see.
Yeah, and some beer.
And beer, yes. So the beer analogy was fun. I can tell you a side story if you want to know.
Oh, please.
But obviously there's a lot of long, long history for beer making and production in the Czech Republic and in Europe in general. Yeah. And I found it very interesting that it has gone through and done a lot of the same things that most things have done in the industrialized world back in the 1800s and 1900s, and then had a little bit of a dormant period and then another big resurgence. Yep. And then now another form or another iteration of it is happening. And we made the parallel with that. Beer obviously made sense to the audience with what we've been seeing inside of the technology industry.
Yeah. And I would have to agree. I mean, just to use the word something artisanal. Who came up with that?
It was him.
Sorry. So he didn't see the slides until the other day. And he's like, what
the hell is modern artisanal?
Modern artisanal IT pros.
Yeah, that is. We just created that.
We just created that new term. Trademark, modern artisanal IT pros.
Trademark 2019 Patch and Switch Incorporated.
So the idea of the artisanal is simply paying homage back to the original forms and then modernizing it and making it more accessible to people. That is the goal of what the current Wave 2 is, and then being able to share that information with the Wave 3, the millennials and young, lack of a better term, the younger people coming into the industry, even young from the sense that they just weren't involved with the development of the Wave 2 of technology.
The cloud native.
The cloud native
first
folks,
kind of businesses that are out there.
Yeah. And so, artisanal came in. And he called me out on stage about the artisanal.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Last night, everything was artisanal. Yeah, when we were at the VIP reception, I was constantly remarking that, oh, is that artisanal?
And, and everyone around you were like, what?
Yeah, well, for the most part, they're like, huh?
Who's this dude saying that?
What, artisanal. Why is he saying that?
And the funny thing with the waves is that we're still using, through all these waves, we're still using storytelling, which is in turn a very, very old art, if you like, to bring the whole change forwards.
Yep. Absolutely. The concept of being able to share and retell design choices and architectural choices will be, in my opinion, better received by the people you're sharing with than if you just go with a static, boring slide 1 of 87 discussion of why the OU architecture for your Active Directory was designed this way and the replication partners between the different sites and things like that. It works better if you're able to put that into a modern context and also into tangible context they're going to be able to understand. So storytelling comes into play.
And that's something we learned during the keynote as well, that Joey loves AD replication.
I used to love replication. Which, I don't know. No, let's see. I love troubleshooting replication. I didn't love replication because it caused problems. But no, I got really good at troubleshooting replication.
Yeah.
It's one of those skill sets, right? When you corner the market on something that is so niche.
So that's a Joey Ripple admin.
Rep admin show rep. Okay, I'm not going to go there. And your listeners who know what I'm talking about have just gone, no, stop, Joey.
And looking at what your day job, as we spoke about on the way here, how do you use that storytelling or storytelling in general in your day jobs? Because you both work very customer and partner facing, I would guess. So how do you use it?
So for me, it's really key because I am this interface between our engineers and our partners and customers. Yep. And that's the role, that's the organization that I sit in. We call it customer and partner experience. Yep. Well, I tend to be more partner focused today. Tomorrow it could be customer focused. Yep. But I have to be able to tell stories back to my engineers to help them understand, because a lot of the engineers and particularly some of the developers, they've not dealt with this on-premises world. They don't understand that, well, why don't you just upgrade that app? And we take them out to our organization is really good. In fact, we can take them out to customers, get them to understand that. But we have to tell those stories back so they understand that. And then I have to also tell the story of the reasons why you would do something a certain way, or why are we building something in this in this manner. We don't build things in a vacuum anymore. We don't have a bunch of smart people in a room on a whiteboard going, well, if we build this, and then we just make you use it. We build things based on our customer needs.
Yep.
So our engineers have to hear what the customer stories are, and then our partners and our customers need to hear, once that's there, what's the story of the reasoning why? Why do I have to turn on MFA?
Yeah, I remember you were telling me a story earlier, a couple of weeks ago, about someone on your engineering team. Again, someone that's relatively new to the space, was asked you for a lab. Can you show me how to build a domain? DC Promo.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
We've been doing DC Promo since the year 2000 or 1999. Yep. It's just second nature to us. Whereas this individual needed to have something like that, that they could go off and do some tests against. Yep. And they didn't know how to build it.
No, because they haven't had the reason to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something I sometimes can envy Alexander in as well, because as some may have noticed, there's a slight age difference between me and Alexander.
That's not very nice to Alexander. It's called wisdom.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Alexander knows how things actually work under the covers. And I've only had to actually implement stuff. Mm-hmm. I've never had a reason to understand how it works below the surface. Because I've been given basically a Windows server with a GUI at the start.
Yep.
Just do this or run this script.
Yeah, but
whilst you were forced to know how it actually works.
And I think this is one of the bases for our interactions over the years, that it is 14 years between us. I'm older than him.
Thank you for making
sure. So you have a viewpoint that I lack, and vice versa. So it's true.
And that's part of what we're trying to get at with the keynote was today. Yeah. It was the fact that both people that come with the experience and the age and the supposed wisdom that are currently in the wave two absolutely need to learn and embrace the agility and the speed and also the desire and the passion to solve stuff that exists in three and also exists in two as well. But likewise, the people in wave three have to come down and be open to receiving that information from the folks that have gone off and had to build things.
Yeah.
They know how to use ADC edit. They know how to go in and extend the schemas. Yeah. They know about these tiny little tweaks to do things that really you'd never need to know unless you've come up across a problem that solves, which may not happen anymore, but happened back then.
It's a big challenge when I talk to partners and customers, and we go around readiness and it's, hey, I need to be 400 level deep. Well, no, you don't. We run a service now.
Yep.
If you're 400 level deep, 500 level deep, you should come work for us. We've got openings. Microsoft.com/careers. Go take a look if you want to come. But now it's, hey, do you have a lab that shows how you enable self-service password reset? Well, no, you go to the portal and you click a radio button that says on.
Yeah.
That is literally what we're talking about here.
It's a very fast demo.
And it's one of those things that you show it as a demo and they go, but there's more. No, there's not more to it. That's what we are trying to do. We don't build product anymore. We build services. So the underlying architecture and those kinds of things are fun stories to tell. And we like to tell them. In fact, at Ignite, Nadim came into Alex Simon's session and he brought in a lot of the, we use this many cores to run the service, like this inside baseball talk that we have. But the average or even better than average IT professional, really, you don't need to know how all of that works. You need to understand the reasoning behind the decisions that you have to make when you make certain decisions. What is the impact of that decision? Can you turn on multi-factor authentication by saying MFA on? Yes, absolutely, you can do that. But then you could end up in a scenario like what happened with the customer that I just talked to last week, which was they did it the first time and they did it so completely wrong, it's made the business really against multi-factor authentication because it was not set up correctly. And so now we've actually, because the technology has grown and changed and modernized, we actually have the ability to kind of do, this is what would have happened if we enabled this conditional access yep. policy for multi-factor. Here's when they would have been prompted and who would have been prompted. We can actually show that now. Yep. But prior to that, which was cool to have this customer feedback, you wouldn't really know. And so making the right decisions and understanding what is the impact of those decisions, where you can layer on the piece that Rick has been mentioning about the level two, level three, the transition that we have from client server to cloud based. You understand what the decisions and why the decisions were made initially. And then you can go back and reevaluate and look at what you're doing now. And then, is it the best way to be doing it the way that we've been doing it? Do we have to make changes or modernization? And those are the things that we have. That's your 400 level thinking today. Yeah. That's what depth and being deep in tech is today. It's understanding those types of things. It's very, very rare that you're going to have somebody at that Cisternals, you know, Mark Rusinovich, you know, understanding how every little piece runs when you're dealing with services, because we don't expose that. And it's done deliberately. You know, that's why we exist. Our engineers exist to build these services, because we have to make it simpler. Yeah. Particularly with identity and becoming that center of security, we cannot have something be uber complex. We did a really great job with Active Directory and yeah. scaring the absolute crap out of administrators to not change anything.
Oh, don't you schema extension boards. You have to present it to the schema extension board.
Yeah. Heck, even just modifying a group policy causes a big change control. But we did a really good job of doing that. But then what we have also done is we've also caused really just a big freeze on implementing things that have to be implemented. You have to do this, or you really should do yep. this. You really have to implement MFA. Yeah. That's one of the main things I'm always talking about, right? But there's a lot of changes in when you start talking about MySpace, but in the identity world. But it goes throughout the rest of IT infrastructure.
Yeah.
And it's having somebody who can share, if you have somebody in the organization that was there, that can share those underlying thoughts and then help along that transition. And then where's this next wave of people and where are they coming from and how are we helping that next generation? We had our mentors, we had the people who helped us, or a lot of us just kind of picked that up because we jiggled the cable in you know, it's one of Rick's favorite stories. He jiggled the printer cable. I hacked the WinNA file so that I could get Solitaire on a machine that it had it blocked out. And then I stumbled, you know, right into this space. And now where do we find that generation? So that's a lot of what the story was about.
Yeah.
And it's just about our passion around this industry. And we all have to change. It's really, really hard. It's really hard when we run these events and we get, oh, it's not deep enough. Well, wait, let's ask.
Exactly.
Have you grown? Have you grown maybe beyond this in yep. your career that it's not, or maybe that depth is something different now. That depth is not so much the how, but it's the why.
Yep.
I was just about to say that because we're both trainers and we've been at it for a while. And if I were to explain some level 400 stuff to you in a way that it sounds like a level 100, is it a level 100 or is it a level 400?
No, I mean, yeah, it's...
and if you can't understand it, it's on me. I have failed to explain adequately to you. So that brings us back to the whole storytelling mm-hmm. part. Why do you think technologists in general are so poor at storytelling? This is one of the absolute core principles. But as a technical species, we tend to be pretty bad at it.
I think it's because people don't realize it's a skill you have to develop. You are both trainers. We used to be trainers as well back in the day. And it's a...
You made us sound old.
I know. back when I was this young.
See, people could have totally thought that we were like the real young buck gorillas here.
It's not it. So people that become trainers, that become consultants, that are more forward-facing, people that do speak in a public conference, stuff like that, they've decided to invest in the skill of storytelling. it's different than going to a Toastmasters and learning how to speak in front of an audience.
Yep.
It's actually being able to craft a story, make it so that people have empathy for the people that are in that story and what it is. Technology's playing different roles, that sort of stuff. And then using whatever skills you have to be able to enhance and support that story through your explanations, your demos, the content and the labs and stuff like that. And it's a time-consuming craft to invest in. But, you know, that's the generic whitewash term that you'll hear an awful lot of with, you know, soft skills training or whatever it is for our IT folks. I find that the storytelling aspect of it makes it so that you can definitely explore different areas inside of your career and different options that you have available to you.
Yeah.
And it's something that you have to find your passion around what it is that you want to tell a story about. I mean, I could tell you a story about nuclear fission, and it's probably going to be really boring because it's not exactly an area of passion for me. But I could tell you a story about how to make one of the best handcrafted beer in my garage, and I could go on probably for hours about it and give you all the minute details, but make it interesting enough that you're going to want to pay attention. So got to be passionate about it. Got to want to make the investment, take the little nudge or the push from someone that sees something, and then find topics that you're interested in to be able to start to work that craft of storytelling. And it'll pay off dividends.
What we do is no different than if you were to run into us at a bar, if you were to sit and have coffee with us. We're excited about things and we want to tell everybody about the things that we're excited about, whether it's beer making, whether it's, you know, music, IT, tech.
Working on my Jeep.
On your Jeep. And what you hear and through our shows and through the presentations that we do or just hanging out with us is genuinely what we have there. And I think everybody has this storytelling ability. The question is that how do you then translate and can you translate?
Yep.
And that translation comes, again, it comes from that passion piece. If you're not everybody's going to be the management guy. Not everybody's going to be the guy that you're going to put in front of the BG. Right, the business group to make these decisions. And that's okay. You can be the introverted tech person, but when it comes time to tell the story, and everybody will eventually have to you have to tell the story every year during your yearly review cycles or those types of things. We constantly do that.
And when you're pitching a new product to adopt, when you're trying to get funding or trying to make a business case to be able to go down a different path from which your norm would happen to be inside the environment, you're presenting in front of an audience of maybe your manager and your peers to be able to try to make a case. You can go very much in depth with that story, or you can just kind of present the facts and let the facts speak for themselves. But it's going to be more impactful if you invest the time in that.
Yeah. So I work in the data sphere, and people say, well, let the data tell the story and so on and so forth. I argue that data does not have its own voice. It's only the voice that you lend to it. And just what you just said, and making a story around the data or whatever pitch you want to do, that's key, as opposed to just presenting the facts and hoping that people are going to go for it.
Mm-hmm. You are 100% correct in that. Our organization is very data driven, but it wasn't until we were actually able to go tell the stories around the data and say, look, the data is confirming what we know from these stories from our customers. Or a lot of times we leverage the data to figure out, are we missing something? Customer says this, we don't think that that's true. What's the data telling us? Is it confirming or denying it? And then, we had no idea that this is a thing. And we have to go dig into what that thing is. You're 100% right. But data is huge and a key part of it. And I'm constantly, Rick and I are talking about this all the time, is how do we differentiate? How do we do these things in our day jobs that we can prove that we are the key cogs of this because the data represents that.
Yeah. How do we make data matter? Pretty much.
Well, And it will, if you have that story.
Hmm. Yeah. As you mentioned, it's definitely an interpretation. You no longer can you just let it speak for itself because it can be interpreted 12 different ways. Mm-hmm. People are going to skew it one way, skew it a different way, obscure some of that data that doesn't match their assumptions or the results that they're looking for. So you have to govern that and then be able to bring it up to make those choices.
Yep. Before we finish off this episode, I would like you to say hello to our third buddy, Mr. Blacksway, Tony.
Mr. Blacksway is our good friend, who is on, I see him most episodes of the Patch Switch program.
Yes.
Yeah.
As part of the chat room participants and as an active participant as well.
Yeah. He's one of your absolutely biggest fans.
And he's not here.
No, we are actually a bit ashamed of ourselves that we are making this interview without him.
So he's ashamed. I'm scared shitless because we need to get home and explain to this pretty big Finnish guy that, yeah, we had an interview with Patch and Switch and we kind of didn't do it with you.
Yeah. So if you're listening, we have 5 or 6 beer in front of us. We just had a beautiful tasting. It's a great environment that we're in right now. This is actually the excerpt. The original podcast was actually 2.5 hours long.
Yeah.
We actually lost track of time, so we had to really quickly put this one together. So sorry you missed it, but you'll have to catch you next time.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah.
And on that bombshell, I think it's actually time to end this episode. Thank you so much for coming on. It has been great. I've learned a ton, as absolutely. I always do. Go check out Patch and Switch, and we'll be back in about a week. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Yeah,